Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the VIAVI Solutions third quarter 2016 VIAVI Solutions earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during this conference, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone to reach an operator. As a reminder, this conference call may be recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Bill Ong, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Charlotte. Welcome to VIAVI Solutions third quarter fiscal 2016 earnings call. My name is Bill Ong, Head of Investor Relations. Joining me on today's call are Oleg Khaykin, President and CEO, and Amar Maletira, CFO. Please note this call will include forward-looking statements about the company's financial performance. These statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from current expectations. We encourage you to review our most recent SEC filings, particularly the risk factors described in those filings. The forward-looking statements, including guidance we provide during this call, are valid only as of today. VIAVI undertakes no obligation to update these statements. Please also note that unless we state otherwise, all results are non-GAAP. We reconcile these non-GAAP financials to our preliminary GAAP financials and discuss the usefulness and limitations in today's earnings release. The release, plus our supplementary slides, which include historical financial tables, are available on our website. Finally, we are recording today's call and will make the recording available by 4:30 P.M. Pacific Time this evening on our website. I would now like to turn the call over to Amar.
Thank you, Bill. Overall, we executed well in our fiscal third quarter. Revenue of $220.4 million was above our guidance midpoint of $218 million. OSP exceeded the guidance, while NSE was at the lower end of the guidance range. Revenue was up 3.8% year-over-year, driven by strong performance in our OSP segment that offset the decline in NSE. Our operating income at $26.2 million grew $7.2 million or 37.9% year-over-year. Operating margin of 11.9% was above our guidance midpoint of 11.7% and up 300 basis points year-over-year as a result of continued strong performance in OSP and operating expense management. Operating expenses declined 7.2% year-over-year or $8.5 million, driven primarily by G&A expense reduction and R&D spend optimization. EPS at $0.09 was at the high end of the guidance range of $0.07 to $0.09 and grew 50% year-over-year. Now moving to the results by segment, starting with NSE. NSE revenue at $158.3 million declined 3.5% year-over-year, driven by the decline of 11.8% in the SE segment. While the enterprise business within SE grew double-digit, we remain challenged in the assurance business, where the mature products revenues declined at a faster pace compared to the growth in the new products. NSE gross margins at 63.5% declined 440 basis points year-over-year due to margin degradation in SE as a result of a steep runoff of the higher margin mature products and a non-recurring dilutive impact to margins from initial acceptance of solutions in the growth products. NSE's operating margins was roughly break-even and was below the guidance range due to the gross margin decline in SE, which was partially offset by a reduction in operating expenses. The book-to-bill ratio for NSE was slightly above one, with higher bookings over revenue both in the NE and SE segments. Turning to OSP. OSP revenue at $62.1 million grew 28.3% from a year-ago levels, driven by higher demand in the anti-counterfeiting business. Gross margins at 57.8% improved 350 basis points, and operating margin at 42.4% improved 670 basis points from last year due to higher revenue, favorable product mix, and higher factory utilization. Turning to the balance sheet. Our total cash and short-term investments ending balance was $1 billion, which includes the remaining 9.2 million shares in Lumentum, valued at $244.3 million. During the quarter, we sold 2.5 million shares of Lumentum stock with an average stock price of $24.47, resulting in net proceeds of $61.2 million. Our book cost basis on these shares is approximately $8.57 per share. As a result, we realized on GAAP-only P&L an accounting gain of approximately $39.7 million. Our operating cash flow for the quarter was $36.3 million. Now turning to our guidance, we expect fiscal fourth quarter revenue to be in the range of $212 million to $228 million, operating margin at 12.7% plus or minus 1%, and EPS to be 8 cents to 10 cents. We expect NSC revenue to be slightly up sequentially at $160 million plus or minus $6 million, with operating margin at 2.5% plus or minus 1%. We expect OSP revenue to be at $60 million plus or minus $2 million, with operating margin at 40% plus or minus 1%. Our tax expense is expected to be about $5 million. We expect other income and expenses to be a net expense of $2.5 million, and our share count to be approximately 237 million shares. With that, I will now turn the call to Oleg.
Thank you, Amar. Before I get to my commentary on our business, I would like to share with you my initial impressions and perspectives since coming to Viavi 3 months ago. In the past 90 days, I have visited many of our locations and have met with our major customers. There are four major areas of strength that clearly stand out. The first, the impressive and abundant technical talent within the company. The second, the strength and competitiveness of our product portfolio. The third, a strong reputation for innovation, quality, and service with top customers around the world. And lastly, the many promising and innovative growth initiatives within the company. At the same time, Viavi faces operating challenges that need to be addressed. Our R&D and SG&A footprint is too broad for a company of our size. Our resources are too thinly stretched, both geographically and financially, to execute on all of our products and technology initiatives. Many of our issues stem from a lack of comprehensive integration and rationalization of the many acquisitions that the company has made over the years. In addition, we need to further improve our discipline in planning and allocating our investment in resources. My management team and I have already started to address some of these challenges. We are in the process of putting together a comprehensive new strategy that is built around driving share in Viavi's core markets and improving OPEX productivity. In the coming months, I will be providing you with more color around our strategy and share with you our goals, objectives, and milestones. Now, getting back to commentary in our quarter. We exceeded the overall guidance midpoint for Viavi despite both delayed customer spending and weaker results in the SE business segment. The March quarter is traditionally a seasonally weak quarter for us, as service providers and enterprise customers get their CapEx and IT spending budgets for the calendar year. It was further exacerbated by macroeconomic concerns in January that caused NSE customers to either scale back or delay spending. Our instruments business, or NE, was essentially flat year over year. During the quarter, we saw a strength in the demand for fiber lab and field test equipment, driven by fiber to the home and fiber for wireless backhaul deployments in North America and 100 gig deployment globally. Access and storage network test also grew from levels a year ago. Cable was down year on year as customers reduced their purchases in anticipation of DOCSIS 3.1 upgrade cycle. The exact timing of the DOCSIS 3.1 upgrade cycle remains unclear, but we are still expecting the deployment to start in calendar 2016, ramp gradually, and spread over the next several years. Viavi is very well positioned to benefit from this upcoming upgrade cycle. The macroeconomic uncertainty and slower deal closure challenged the SE segment of our business. Although our enterprise business was by double-digit percentage from a year ago, our revenue levels were below our internal expectations as IT budgets were slow to release. Furthermore, our mature products within SE, as expected, continued to decline significantly year over year. The decline in margin-rich mature products was greater than the growth in new SE products, leading to a weaker than expected overall performance for the SE segment. Given the projected reduction in carrier CapEx and weaker enterprise IT spend, we are taking a more cautious near-term outlook for our NSC business. In addition, we are putting together a plan to revamp our NSC strategy along three vectors. The first one, aggressively defend and expand our market share position in instruments. The second, exercise greater investment discipline and customer and application focus on the SE side of the business, and thirdly, drive OpEx productivity improvement. We will provide greater details around this strategy over the next 2 quarters. On the OSP segment, the OSP segment delivered the second highest revenue quarter at $62.1 million. The business continues to benefit from high volume banknote printing. While the current level of banknote printing demand is expected to continue into Q4, we expect it to come down to historical levels thereafter. As such, we expect the OSP revenue to be down modestly during the fiscal year 2017. While we are pleased with the solid execution and record profitability of our OSP business, we continue to look for opportunities to diversify its revenue base through increased leverage of its core capabilities, intellectual property, and fixed assets. In closing, I'm pleased with our performance during what turned out to be a challenging quarter for our customers and peers. I'm happy to be part of the Viavi team and look forward to driving the transformation of our company into a profitable and growing enterprise. We have a lot of work and many challenges ahead of us, but I have strong confidence in the Viavi management team and our dedicated employees to achieve our goals and objectives and delight our customers and shareholders. Thank you for joining us today, and I look forward to seeing many of you at the upcoming investor conferences and events. I will now turn the call over to Bill. Bill?
Thank you, Oleg. I would like to highlight the following upcoming investor relations events. We will be presenting at Stifel's Investor Conference in San Francisco on June 6th. Our Analyst Day event will be held on our Milpitas campus on September 15th. Charlotte, let's begin the question and answer session, and let's take our first caller.
Certainly. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the star, then the number one key on your touchtone telephone. And if your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Once again, to ask a question at this time, please press the star, then the number one key on your touchtone telephone. Our first question comes from the line of James Kisner from Jefferies. Your line is now open.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much. So your guidance at the midpoint here suggests some of the, you know, a pretty weak sequential performance, just given typical seasonality on carrier spending. I guess, you know, one clarification, have you factored any potential weakness from a potential strike at Verizon? And I guess I'm trying to understand better why the instruments business wouldn't be up more or the NE business wouldn't be up more in June just from carrier spending seasonality.
So I think you said it well here. When you look at our guidance for fiscal Q4, the historical seasonality is in NSE, the revenue goes up roughly 9 to 10%. But we are modeling a low single-digit increase in revenue from Q3 to Q4 because we are factoring in the macroeconomic pressure in terms of, you know, IT spending in enterprise as well as the CapEx spending environment in the service provider. We are also factoring in some of the strike that you just mentioned with some of our top service providers. So that's what's factored in. We are taking, as Oleg mentioned in his prepared remark, we are taking more cautious near-term outlook on the environment. And if the spending goes up, we will go execute aggressively and go capture that spend.
You know, this is Oleg just adding to it. You know, if you look at a lot of the announcements from major service providers, they all kind of missed, if you can call it, their quarterly CapEx spend. What it tells me is essentially they're, you know, holding back on spending the money and kind of kicking the can forward, while at the same time they all claim they're still committed to their annual CapEx. So, you know, I think if I were a betting man, I would probably wait to see the money before I do any kind of spending. And from my perspective, I think it's prudent to be cautious and control your costs until we see meaningful movement on the spend and major service providers actually trying to hit their spending targets. If the second quarter they continue to miss their spending targets and they still stay committed, we may see a stronger second half. But somehow I think, you know, everybody is just announcing the numbers and we'll keep watch carefully how the spending environment is going to develop during the year.
Okay, just a quick follow-up on that on NE. You said you want to aggressively defend your shared instruments. You know, what tactics are you planning there? Should we infer that you plan to compete more aggressively on price, or is there some other inference we should draw? Thanks.
Well, I mean, our products are very good. I mean, we don't need to resort to price cutting to win it. I think when I talk about aggressively take back market share, it's really about putting more sales resources on the segments that we have somewhat pulled out. I mean, in the last few years, Viavi has spent a lot of effort developing the SE side of the business, and to some extent, I would say we probably did not pay enough attention to our traditional core business, although we did very well. I believe by increasing the level of focus in our sales force and our channels on our instruments business, we are going to take back our fair share of the market.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Patrick Newton from Stifel. Your line is now open.
Yeah, good afternoon, Oleg and Mark. Thank you for taking my questions. I guess first I wanted to drill in on the SE business and hoping you could help us understand how big the legacy service assurance business is currently within that mix. And then when you look at the assets within SE, do you think M&A is required or do you have the right pieces in place to compete in that market?
So let me start, and I'm sure Oleg will join in here. So in terms of the mix, Patrick, the mix between the mature product and the new growth product is roughly about, I would say, 38% to 62%. So 38% of mature, 62% of growth product. So that is flipped from say, a year ago. As we see, continue to see the runoff in the mature products, and the growth side not picking up at the same pace, although it's picking up from a lower base, but you know it is growing high double digit, but not at the same pace as the mature product runoff. So, with anything else, Oleg?
Sure. I mean, so I think you know, let me give you a little better way to understand it. I mean, we talk about mature growth. I mean, realistically, every business has mature, every business has growth, and so I mean, I think there's probably no sense putting lipstick on a pig. The issue that Viavi has is we are missing the middle portion of the business, which is products and its prime. So Viavi had a very strong position in what today is a mature product back, say, 15 years ago. Then the company missed effectively the next generation of technology and then put together a strategy to through acquisition and new development to develop the next generation. So we have maturing products, which as you can call N-1, and we have very nice product offering in N+1, which is now ramping up, and we're spending a lot of money to deploy it and install it at customer sites. The mature product, which is generation N-1, is obviously requiring very little cost. It's almost all pure 100% margin. But, you know, unfortunately for our technology, well, fortunately or unfortunately, it's working really well. And customers are realizing this thing, there's been never any problems, and it's, you know, it's like why pay insurance on a car that sits in a garage? I mean, they've realized that, hey, there's no more sense paying maintenance fees because the software is mature, it's running very well, and we never have any problems. So they're scaling back that spend. What's missing for us is the that generation that we missed, which today would be just at about peak of its both revenue and margin generation. So as such, we have that gap in between that as mature business drops off, and while our growth business is picking up very nicely, we are missing that piece that kind of provides a stabilizing force for the segment P&L. And that's really what the best way to understand our SE business and the situation in which we find ourselves today.
Great. That's very helpful. And I guess just looking forward to big picture question is investors are increasingly questioning the impact of either enterprises moving apps to the cloud or service providers implementing SDN and NFV. So if we look at both your SE and NE businesses, what are the implications of your customers moving more of their applications to the cloud and virtualization, and how is Viavi adjusting to the shifting environment?
Well, I think, you know, we're not a very big player. So, I mean, we clearly see actually quite a bit of growth in our enterprise business, and we are getting quite a bit of traction with major data center operators. So I think in that respect, you know, if we were obviously an 800-pound gorilla, I could probably give you more indication whether things are up or down. But given from where we sit, we feel pretty comfortable that we have more growth potential in our enterprise business.
and on the core service provider with any?
Go ahead.
Any implications on the NE side from the same types of trends? Or are you for,
on the NE side, we, you know, most of our instruments go to service providers, but we do have, the lab equipment like network storage test and some of the fiber test equipment that you need to deploy, fiber in the data center. So, in that respect, we do not see any impact. I think the network storage is largely driven by the new protocols and new standards being introduced, like such as fiber channel and 100 gig, 400 gig Ethernet. And on the fiber test, that's a very healthy market as more and more data centers deploy, 100 gig in their data centers and 400 gig. We see healthy demand there as well.
Great. Thank you for taking my questions. Good luck.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rod Hall from J.P. Morgan. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for the question. I guess I wanted to ask two. The first one would be with regards to your commentary on the Verizon strike. I think you had said, Oleg, that's factored in, but I'm wondering what length of strike you're assuming in your guidance. So if you could give us any color on just how long you're assuming this strike lasts, that would be helpful. And then the second thing I wanted to ask is on the, I thought the N plus one and minus one end generation end commentary was helpful. I just wanted to understand whether for N plus one you feel like you're completely, you feel like you've got all the technology you need. So is that all developed and ready to go, Oleg? And it's just a question of the market catching up with your products, or do you feel like there's more to do there to be positioned? Thanks.
Thanks. I have no crystal ball for Verizon strike, and I think, I think we don't have any, precise calculation or mathematical model. The primary thing for us is we are estimating that, first and foremost is just the reduced spend of the service providers, right? That's a fact, and I think that is by far the biggest driver of lower spend. And clearly, the Verizon strike probably impacts us a bit more on the incrementally because they are one of our biggest customers. And clearly, when there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of decisions get delayed. And, on the other hand, to the extent it ends and things get back to normal, we may see some of the pent-up demand. Your second question you had on, could you repeat again?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you feel like you've got all the technology needed for SE for this N plus one that you describe, or if you think that there's still more development needed, more investment needed there. And also on your comment on the Verizon strike, can you quantify how much you've taken out of revenue in association with a strike, or give us any kind of numerical quantification on that? Thanks.
So I'm not going to comment on our individual customer revenues or impacts. I mean, we don't do that stuff. So I'm going to politely decline.
Okay.
Regarding the SC products, we have a very competitive, very nice product offering. Now, it is by no means completely filled out. We have, I wouldn't say we have a full breadth of all the services, but we have a good enough offering to be able to offer end-to-end solution from the edge to the core of the network. At the same time, we are, every time you win business, it's good news, bad news. On one hand, you make great bookings, but now you have to go and deploy and install and spend a lot of money to get that system in place. Obviously, that drives up near-term OPEX before you see any of that high-margin revenue, and it drives significant demand for a lot of resources. So what we are looking to do in that business is really to be more focused, trying to target customers and applications where we have effectively, think of it as a shrink-wrapped solution with minimum additional engineering involved in installing it at a customer site, and targeting the customers whose network is more ideally overlaps the solution that we have available today. So that makes us much more efficient from the OPEX point of view in deploying these solutions, and also it de-risks us from basically swallowing bigger chunk of meat than we can chew. And in general, in terms of technology, where I'd qualify, we're especially well-positioned in the 4G against the incumbents, and in 5G as it develops and starts getting deployed. So really, this is where we are targeting the market intercept to as a sweet spot to position our product offering.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Meta Marshall from Morgan Stanley. Your line is now open.
Hi, just a couple of quick questions. One, you know, to the point that was just made and just kind of point from the commentary is, are you forecasting no recovery in service provider spend in fiscal Q4 or any sort of, or is there uptick kind of built in? And then the second question is just, on some of the sales force focus changes in the NE business, I know you made changes a couple of quarters ago, so I wanted to know, are these changes you feel like are already in motion, or are these changes that will need to take place before we see some increased momentum in the NE business? Thanks.
Thank you. So, you know, I don't know what's in the service providers' minds in terms of how they're going to spend money. I mean, clearly, we know that there are where the opportunities are, whether they get released or not, you know, it still remains to be seen. We kind of early in the quarter. I just take what any prudent CEO would do. I don't want to put out things out there that I have no visibility. And obviously, to the extent they try to catch up to at least where they should be in their spend, their announced spend for the first half of the year, I think we will see an upside. If that doesn't happen and they still insist on catching up on the spend, we may see stronger second half of the calendar year. So at this point, I'm not going to speculate because I think, you know, at this point in time, I don't think there's any data for or against a repeat of the first quarter. Regarding the sales, I think we started reallocating to sales. We started investing in sales about a quarter or two ago. Obviously, some of that is still percolating. You cannot just hire or redeploy resources quickly. So that's work in process. But I think we're going further than that. What I said is actually proactively redeploying resources, sales assets and sales resources to give greater focus to the network instruments and focus what I would call a specialized, highly trained sales force on marketing and selling our SE products.
And just to add to that, to Oleg's point, the stuff that we already started off was the channel side, right? As you recall, we said we had launched a velocity program, a channel program. So that implementation is already underway. And it'll take some time for it to really pick up and hit ramp up, but that program is already underway.
Very good point, Amar. And, you know, as you can imagine, the channels, you have to first sign up channel partners. You got to train them. You got to give them collateral. So all these things, I mean, you can have the proverbial pig moving through the python. You know, that initiative is already well underway, and we should start seeing results coming up in the next quarter or two.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Dimitri Nittis from William Blair. Your line is now open.
Yes, hi. I had a quick question on the comment, Oleg, you made with regard to R&D and SG&A being broad and, you know, for the company of this size. And then, you know, you have an international footprint and many locations. How are you addressing this challenge? Or maybe understanding you, this is something maybe you're not ready to do yet, but you know, do you have that sort of on the way? You're putting a plan together of what that may entail? You know, just kind of give us maybe a preview of what that may look like when you have your plan and when you're ready to kind of move on that.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, as you know, Viavi and JDS before it was a very acquisitive company. So we have design centers all over the world. And while some of them are very much at a critical mass or even above a critical mass, we have also a lot of sites that are subcritical mass. So I think, you know, part of it is, you know, there's always inefficiencies when you don't have everybody under one roof, I mean, my dream scenario would have everybody in one location, but that's not what we have. So we have to develop a structure that can efficiently leverage distributed design environment, but also we are going to work to consolidate into fewer locations. And as you can imagine, that needs to be done carefully because we want to preserve the talent base, and we got to be careful to see what functions we can move and what functions we cannot move. So that's obviously, as you can imagine, is quite a bit of work. And the second one is, you know, if I look at our instrumentation business, it's at scale. It's has a strong market position. We have product and technology leadership. And, you know, I have no problem to actually increasing the investment in that business because for many years it was somewhat of the underinvested area. At the same time, when I look at our SE, we have spent a lot of money in the past few years. We've gone very broadly, and we've largely filled out a lot of our portfolio, and now what we need to do is really start productizing. So as products release, you know, you have, you know, some of the engineering intensity and load is going to start to decrease, and that will give us an opportunity to reallocate resources to the areas where we want to increase greater focus. But that by no means mean that we're going to increase our R&D budget. What I'm talking a lot is about redeploying and driving efficiencies, which will enable us to do, as our theory goes, the same amount of work with potentially fewer resources in a more efficient environment.
Okay, that's great. And if I can have a follow-up, on the SNSC side of things, where you noted some strength, specifically in the fiber to the home areas, you know, fiber to the wireless station, base station, and maybe 100 gig core, as well as maybe the access side that you think was sort of in line with expectations. So can you give us a breakdown of, you know, that business, let's say the fiber optical business versus access versus cable, how those, how the mix sort of works, and maybe wireless too, like 4G, 3G, 4G test. What is roughly kind of the mix of those categories within that?
I will not give you the mix, but I'll tell you, like, in terms of the strongest momentum kind of to the weakest, right? So clearly fiber is by far the strongest in both the core and metro area, and also in when it comes to the access, like wireless deployment. The area where there is some weakness in the recent quarter was more cable, and that's largely, you know, driven by, you know, customers starting, you know, cutting back on their spend buying new instruments as they prepare for DOCSIS 3.1 deployment. So I expect the cable to kind of follow. First, you kind of deploy the fiber. You do a lot of fiber to also, you know, get the products, equipment manufacturer products ready for market. And then you bring up kind of the edge product. And obviously also the G.fast is a standard that's developing, and it's also going to be driving some access. So I would say we're seeing a lot more strength today in the core and metro for fiber deployment, and we expect the access demand to follow thereafter.
Okay, so fiber is the biggest chunk, then comes access, and then comes cable. That's kind of the way to think about the rough
numbers. Yeah, that's more or less kind of the way I think about it in terms of kind of moving parts that will drive our business.
And gotcha. And then lastly, on the mature side of the business in SC, can you give us a view into that, a little bit more specificity as far as what products or product lines or names of those product lines that sit in that category? Are there software products, hardware products? I mean, how do we think about the mature product set? Is it the old Agilent business?
So when we talk about mature, it's really all software products, right? So it's a legacy assurance business that was mainly targeted wireline. It's your 2G, it's your SONET, it's DS3, you know, these type of products, right? That was the wave that was kind of launched maybe in the kind of early 2000s, something like that, right? Maybe even late 90s, you know, that's what we're talking about. So SONET, DS3, kind of 90s legacy wireline, and 2G and wireless. So that's the kind of the what I would describe as the legacy. The thing that we missed is really this whole 3G, Ethernet conversion and things like that. And what we are now investing into Intercept, that's the 4G, various service deployments, 5G, and a lot of the virtualization that we are seeing in the network. So, I mean, fundamentally for us, it's the part of the cycle that we missed in the early in the 2000s is what's giving us a lot of the drag on the results of that business today.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that caller. Really appreciate it.
And, we call it mature product. I mean, unfortunately, those happen to be your most profitable products because there's virtually no investment, and it's pure profit that drops to the bottom line because it's all maintenance fees.
Right. Makes sense.
Sure.
Thanks, Paulette.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jorge Rivas from Craig-Hallum Capital. Your line is now open.
Good evening, guys. Thanks for taking my question. So first, I wonder if you can provide some color on what is your exposure to data center and web scale Dodo type of customers. In the last two calls, it seems like you've been working to increase your offerings on the enterprise side and also on the data center. So if you can provide some color on what you can offer to those type of customers in terms of services and products, and if you can quantify the size of the revenues compared to the overall size of the business.
Okay, so I'm not going to quantify the revenue, but I tell you it's still relatively small in the scope of things, but it's not too small. It's a nice and fast-growing product line. What we sell mainly in data centers is the lab equipment. So it's your storage network test equipment. You got your fiber test equipment. It's kind of the level one to level three test and measurement equipment that goes into the data center. And we also have, obviously, some of the enterprise assurance software that we target into hyperscale data centers.
Okay, great. As far as customer diversification, I believe last quarter you mentioned you added two new Tier 1 customers for your X-Site solutions. First, I wonder if you have been able to penetrate other Tier 1 or Tier 2 carriers or smaller size customers in North America and other parts of the world, and also, what's the status of these two new added customers, the Tier 1 customers deploying your X-Site solutions?
So let me just give you some additional color here. So the in my prepared remark, I mentioned that we drove acceptances of solutions, and those solutions were accepted by two of our large customers. So, on one hand, it did create some margin pressure because it came with hardware revenue, which typically comes at a lower margin. So think about we sell a solution, so we sell software that sits on the hardware, and then we sell support and services around this whole solution package. So in the first phase of the implementation where the solutions were accepted, the hardware revenue got recognized, which was mainly a pass-through hardware revenue. And that created some pressure on the gross margin. But the good news is there was acceptance of the solution, and we were able to drive actually two acceptances in two of our large customers.
Okay.
Right. And, obviously we are working with a number of other customers trying to, win more business. But we have a fairly decent backlog that is in various stages of acceptance and deployment, which is what's driving a lot of the cost, because that's really you spend a lot of money in the first phase of the deployment. And clearly in the last phase of the life, that's where you make the most profit.
Yeah. So as we go and since these are all new products, we still have to develop PSOE on those products. As Oleg mentioned, this is generation N plus one. And that once we develop PSOE, we will be able to recognize software revenue in period as we sell licenses. Till then, we'll have to amortize the software revenue over the life of the deal, and that's what you see happening as we ramp up some of these new products.
Okay, Great, thanks. That's all for me.
Thank you. And at this time, I'm not showing any further questions and would like to turn the call back over to Bill Ong.
Thank you, Charlotte. This concludes our earnings call for today. Thank you, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may all disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.